From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Well, the veto session, which had no vetoes to deal with, is now over. A few items were finished, some left on the table. We'll talk some of what happened and also take a look ahead at what might be coming. That and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime State House reporter and observer. Our guest this week is Mike Miletich. He's the Capitol reporter for WAND-TV here in Central Illinois. Mike, thanks for joining us once again.
Thanks, Sean. Always glad to be back on.
So, Mike, one of the items that did make it through to the governor, I wanted to touch on this right at the start, has to do with something called the sub-minimum wage. Not everybody may be aware of what that is. What does it do, and why was this such a big topic here during the last few days?
The Dignity and Pay Act addresses the current pay for workers with developmental and intellectual disabilities, and this is actually years in the making. Basically, people that work in many workshops and factories across the state are paid as low as 50 cents per hour and may make only $100 per month. Many think that that's wrong, and they're looking for a way to improve that, not automatically with an effective date immediately, but further down the road. So they're trying to phase out this sub-minimum wage by creating a grant program to help community agencies transition away from this low pay. So the current program would be eliminated on July 1st of 2029. And Illinois wouldn't be the first to do this. They've actually been inspired by 18 other states and the city of Chicago to phase out this process. And while many think it is a great idea, pros and cons of it, people think it's well-intentioned. Some people are concerned that many of these businesses that provide opportunities for people with disabilities may end up closing shop because they pay a low wage right now, and they're not sure they'd be able to reach $15 an hour by the point that they hit this 2029 mark. It's been a very emotional process for people on both sides of this issue. Like I said, it's been years in the making. There's been negotiations ever since I've been back here in Springfield back in 2020.
What is the amount that they can be paid currently?
Well, that's the interesting part. Each individual business can pay whatever they want. You know, we heard actually some of the business leaders that came and spoke said, you know, sometimes we have people that come in and are excited to receive that $100 check, or let's say it's $50 if they get paid every 2 weeks. But there are some people that just go to work on a day-to-day basis, and their work could be coloring or shredding paper, and that individual isn't necessarily paid, but their family can pay to have them there to get the social experience with others. And there are a lot of people that feel that is wrong, because everyone should be able to make a livable wage and feel very happy and part of the working society when they get that paycheck.
Yeah, Charlie, it's a laudable goal, I think. Some people with disabilities can actually perform at a very high level, and some may not be able to. And this reminds me of at times we've seen legislation that gets passed with very good intentions, and in the end, it creates more of a problem. Do you think this one would be one of those?
Yeah, I think there could be problems going forward. But as Mike pointed out, the legislation has a five-year phase-in period. There is also, I believe, an appropriation of, I believe the sum is $2 million to help some of these sheltered workshops meet the increased costs. The legislation also calls for a task force to be created, including representatives from these sheltered workshops, to kind of oversee how this process is playing out and make whatever recommendations might be needed for its full implementation as we go forward. So the bottom line for me is I think it's a good idea, and I think that it's worth trying, and money is there to help some of these sheltered workshops. And there's also the possibility that this may be revised based on what the task force finds.
Yeah, Mike, was that good enough for a lot of people? I know that probably some still voted against it, but was it enough to maybe convince a few people who may have been on the fence?
I think that there definitely were people that were cautious with it over the past few years. And truly, 2024 was the first time that there were enough people, enough organizations to side with the sponsors of this. I think a major component of it as well, besides the money to help with the transition for the businesses, this bill also has funding for community group home residents to receive a personal allowance of roughly $100 a month. And the personal needs allowance will also increase annually at the same rate as Social Security cost of living adjustments at the start of each year. And that's a big deal for a lot of the people. The only concern that some of the Republican lawmakers had, including one in my area, Senator Chapin Rose, he noted that a lot of these workers are right near the Indiana border. And the Indiana minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. Obviously, if Illinois goes to $15 an hour, it's going to be a big change. And a lot of these businesses may have to close up shop or move across the border, leaving a lot of these workers with nothing to do but stay in their sillas or their homes.
Well, another piece of legislation that moved through this week, the Senate giving its approval to a measure that will, as what I've seen it billed as, protecting victims who file lawsuits over childhood sexual abuse. So, Mike, what does this do?
Well, you're absolutely right. Many people think, well, isn't this already a thing? And most Illinois laws try to protect survivors and the victims of any sort of assault. But in this situation, it's ensuring that any sort of figure in a school, whether it's a teacher, administrator, or any other adult, cannot place blame on survivors of childhood sexual abuse. This actually dates back to a 2019 lawsuit that was brought by a former Chicago Public School student. And unfortunately, in that case, a CPS psychiatrist testified that not all childhood sexual abuse is traumatic. And she said it depended on the details and what actually happened in that case. So lawmakers were furious when they found out about this. And this plan actually moved pretty quickly out of the House at the end of last spring. And this is one of the things that lawmakers were able to pass during veto this week in the Senate to quickly get this out there to say, no matter what type of sexual assault it is, these children are dealing with trauma, and we should respect that and ensure they're protected in court.
Charlie, your thoughts on this bill?
Oh, I agree 100%. I'll tell you, when this first arose and the case, and this was several years ago, when I read the comments from that so-called expert psychiatrist that CPS had saying that, oh, child sexual abuse isn't necessarily traumatic, I thought to myself, what the dickens? So I'm glad that this is happening, and I'm guessing that the governor will probably sign this within 10 seconds of the time that the bill hits his desk.
So the veto session, as we mentioned, no vetoes to deal with, but the fall session now over with, and lawmakers are gone from the Capitol. They will be back just before the new term of the General Assembly begins in January. It's what they call the lame duck session. And Mike, at this point, from everything you heard this week, are you expecting there's going to be some action when they return in January?
The hurry up and wait of veto session will be much different than what we should expect during lame duck. A lot of the discussions behind closed doors that happened over the past 2 weeks were to think what lawmakers, specifically Democrats, can do to address the Trump administration when they get back in January. It's these few days they have before their inauguration for the next General Assembly that they could truly address anything that's needed to protect LGBTQ rights, workers' rights, reproductive health care rights, as well as some of the worker protections and health care options for migrants here in the state. Obviously, Illinois has spent a lot of money to ensure that people that come here for asylum have a proper life. But there's a lot of thought that this could quickly change with the Trump administration saying that they want to deport as many people as possible. And there's a lot of discussions about what should or should not be done following this presidential election. Another thing to keep in mind is that there's gun reform that has not passed yet, that has been waiting in front of Democrats for quite a while now. The one being what's called Karina's bill that would get guns out of the hands of domestic abusers and bring those guns to law enforcement. One of the reasons this has been held up for such a long time, law enforcement currently oppose it because they do not have the proper storage for these guns once they take it out of the home. And they've asked if the state could provide funding for that, what the next steps would be. Honestly, at this point, I think the reason it has not passed is Democrats may feel that they don't have enough votes at this point. And once they pass January 1st, they'll need less of a vote threshold. They'll only need a simple majority to pass it out of both chambers there.
So, Charlie, you have seen a lot of these what are called lame duck sessions occur. Sometimes some very big legislation passes during those times. What Mike was mentioning there, do you see that on the horizon?
Yeah, I think there will be a lot of efforts made. Usually in the past, lame duck sessions kind of tied up loose ends from what was left over from the prior year. The one that I recall, and this is many years ago, it was when the Republicans lost control of the House. They had a Republican governor and they had a Republican Senate. They lost control of the House, and in that lame duck session before Madigan was voted House Speaker for the new election, they passed a whole bunch of legislation and sent it to the governor, who signed it. And several of the things were really not well thought out. The one that sticks in my mind was legislation that would have redistricted the Supreme Court, and the Republicans didn't think to also then realign the circuit courts so that they matched up the new Supreme Court boundaries. So you had some circuits that were, a portion of the circuit was in one Supreme Court district, portion in another. So obviously that couldn't work. But I think what's different this time around is that there's a sense, and the Democrats are in total control, obviously, and it's going to be a lame duck, but my guess is there aren't that many lame ducks, because I believe every incumbent lawmaker who sought another term got reelected. But one of the things that that they're trying to do, I believe, is position Illinois to be able to resist some of the changes that might come in federal legislation or rules and regulations. The Sun-Times had a editorial the other day saying that one of the things that should be considered is copying federal environmental standards into state law so that they remain in place even if Washington weakens or eliminates them. Issues like air pollution, water discharge standards, Illinois would be affected unless the legislature itself would codify existing federal rules and regulations into state law. So I think that's an area that's going to be one that is going to be looked at in January when the lawmakers come back for, I think it's like a 6-day period before the new General Assembly gets sworn in.
Well, Charlie, isn't it hard to make some of these decisions until you know what Donald Trump and his administration might do? And I think the governor actually touched on that at one point.
Yeah, and I think the time, we're like 6-7 weeks away from this lame duck session. And I think during this period, the legislative leaders, lawmakers interested in different areas of public policy, staff will be working hard to try and figure out, can we take the president-elect at his word? Is he really going to do all the stuff he's talking about? And is he really going to implement that Project 2025 to radically change the federal government? And so we have to have our stuff ready. We have to have everything ready to go and put it in that 6-day period before the new General Assembly gets sworn in, and have it just in case. And if it turns out that the things that Donald Trump was talking about was a lot of it was just campaign rhetoric, and it doesn't get followed through on, well, then that's fine, but we want to be prepared.
Well, one of the things that Donald Trump built his campaign around was the issue of immigration. Illinois has seen many migrants, thousands coming to Illinois, many of them bused here from Texas. But at the same time, the state has had to spend money on them. And Mike, you reported talking with some pretty far-right lawmakers known as the Illinois Freedom Caucus about this issue. What did they have to say?
Well, the Freedom Caucus covers a decent chunk of my viewing area throughout eastern Illinois. And their leader, Representative Chris Miller from Hinsborough, said that Illinois should welcome President Donald Trump's border agency to not only deport people, but get that money that has been used for all the services, for healthcare, for food, for housing here in Illinois, and give that back to the state to use on people that live here legally, according to him. And one of the things that they're really saying is, in order to address the state's expected $3.2 billion budget deficit, is cutting funding for what they describe as woke programs, you know, the services for migrants, ensuring that people have their protections. So they said they're calling on the government to grow common sense, cut spending, and give taxpayers some relief by welcoming ICE and border agents into the state.
And Charlie, you don't expect that the governor's going to pay heed to that necessarily, but...
No, and one of the things, and this is a personal peeve of mine, is that folks like Chris Miller always talk about all these illegals, and that is not accurate. The fact of the matter is many of the folks who are here, and particularly the ones that got shipped up here from Texas by Governor Greg Abbott, are folks who have applied for amnesty. They are here waiting for their application to be processed. They're not illegal in the sense that they snuck across and then got on a train and rode up here to Chicago. And so to disparage them as illegal, I think that's a misstatement, but I think it's intentional in the sense of trying to point out that, well, these people aren't like us and we have to get rid of them. And it also occurs to me the notion of, well, we shouldn't be providing any services for them when they're here. Are we going to say that we'll let them sleep on the streets? If they get ill, we won't provide health care for them? I mean, that may be the hard right position, but it strikes me that it's certainly not in keeping with the notion of America as a nation of immigrants.
Mike, what has the governor's administration had to say about some of these latest comments? Have you heard anything?
Well, multiple times the governor has vowed to oppose any deportation raids by the Trump administration. And the governor has told reporters several times now that Illinois will not allow the federal government to violate people's rights, whether it is the migrants, people that are in the LGBTQ community, Black and brown people. You know, there are some very real potential threats through Project 2025 that the governor is standing up and saying that he will defend the state and the people that live here from the federal government. Now, a lot of Republicans have criticized him saying that, saying that he's being too combative as just being the governor of the state and acting as if he's running for president, even though he's not at this time. You know, that could be a question come 2028, but a lot of people are very contentious on this because they've seen the back and forth during the presidential election season for 2024, and they're hoping that the conversation calms down a bit. But I think that we're going to see these battles in the headlines leading up to Inauguration Day for President Trump and even a little bit after.
Yeah, what was the line? Did I see somebody say something to the effect of drop the macho man routine? Something like that, wasn't that said? Wasn't that in your story, Mike?
Yes, that was about a week and a half ago. Representative Ryan Spain out of Peoria said that Governor Pritzker should drop the macho man routine and focus on being governor of Illinois.
But Charlie, I think he's also just trying to send a message. I mean, and also maybe to try to allay some fears among some people here in Illinois who may feel as though they're being targeted by the Trump administration.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that I find sort of ironic is that the argument about deporting all these people doesn't seem to take into account what are these undocumented folks doing. And they are overly represented in the hospitality industry, and particularly in agriculture. There was a story, I think it was in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel a couple days ago, saying that, and they quoted Wisconsin dairy farmers saying that they haven't encountered a U.S.-born job applicant in years. And the National Milk Producers Federation calculates that almost 80% of America's milk production is thanks to immigrant labor. The pork industry, nearly 75% of farm personnel across the United States are foreign-born, and it's immigration is the cornerstone of pork production. And so if suddenly you deport all these people, who is going to do that work? You know, native-born folks really don't want to take care of pigs and do that kind of stuff. So that, I think, is something that's not being taken into consideration or is being glossed over. Again, I think this whole notion about we got to get rid of these aliens is predicated on fear rather than rational analysis.
And I think we will be hearing from those industries here over the next several weeks as well. Well, another industry that may be in the crosshairs of the Trump administration, some people feel, is the electric vehicle industry. EV chargers, getting those in place is really key to getting that moving. And Mike, just recently, the governor was in, I believe, Joliet to announce some more fast charging ports were being installed there and says more are coming. So where do we stand with that?
The fast chargers were put at an athletic club in Joliet, and it was kind of years in the making because the funding is available through the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency now, and they're providing grants to organizations across the state to build these fast chargers. And at this point, the governor hopes to have a fast charging station every 50 miles across the state. Now, those were just a few chargers at that one location, but the administration hopes to install about 2,000 fast charging ports over the next 18 months, thanks to both funding from the Climate and Equitable Jobs Act and a clean air settlement with Volkswagen. So they have that money, and at this point, it seems that the money will be sent out to organizations because we have it in-house here in Illinois. It won't be up to the federal government to decide what that money could go towards.
So basically, they don't have to worry that that money was going to be pulled at the last minute because it's already been sent. Is that what you're saying?
That's absolutely right.
The bigger concern, I think, and it's been mentioned in several different venues, is that the interest in buying electric vehicles is likely going to diminish if, in fact, the federal credits to help encourage people to buy these vehicles go away. And so that is a bigger problem because electric vehicles are a lot more expensive than, you know, the old gas burners. There were federal credits and also Illinois credits. And the concern is that if the federal credits go away, the notion that Illinois would have a million EVs on the road by 2030, which was the goal of the Pritzker administration, is probably not going to be met.
I would think another problem, Charlie, is that you have, say, Rivian, which is based up in Bloomington and right now seems to be making some real inroads. You also have a major battery supplier that is talking about building a plant here in Illinois and some other industries that are kind of piggybacking off that. So Illinois tried to play itself as a really key spot for this industry. If these things go away and there's less demand, I would think there'll be less demand to make them as well.
So,
I mean, that's a concern economically, I would think, for the state.
And I think part of it is part of the broader inclination, I guess is the way to put it at this point, or the rhetoric from the incoming Trump administration that we're going to shift away from this notion that we have to be worried about climate change and converting to electric vehicles or wind and solar power and we're going to accelerate development of oil and gas resources and opening up federal lands to more resource development, all that stuff that goes against what environmentalists and people who are worried about climate change would recommend.
Let's go now to our notes from the field, and Mike, we'll go to you first.
The Illinois Senate unanimously approved a bill this week to require the Department of Children and Family Services to prioritize placing youth with relatives. Now, people may say, well, doesn't this already happen? There are more than 10,000 Illinois youth in care that live with their relatives, but more than 60% of those caregivers currently don't receive foster care benefits. So this proposal could right that wrong by requiring DCFS to pursue federal funding to have a kinship navigator program helping relatives that have youth in care get the proper funding that they need.
And Charlie.
Well, there was an interesting Supreme Court opinion that came down earlier this week. And what it did was say that the criminal convictions of actor Jussie Smollett will be dismissed. And the High Court said that the disorderly conduct charges against Smollett should be dismissed because if not, he would have been charged for the same crime twice in violation of his due process rights. And the state's attorney's office said at the time that he was originally charged for disorderly conduct, for putting on the hoax that he had been attacked by homophobic individuals. But the Cook County State's Attorney, Kim Fox, dropped the charges as part of a binding agreement in which Smollett voluntarily forfeited a $10,000 bond and performed community service, and it was accepted by a judge. The Supreme Court said the decision to drop the charges was, in fact, a non-prosecution agreement. And in the opinion, Supreme Court Justice Elizabeth Rochford wrote, "We are aware that this case has generated significant public interest and that many people were dissatisfied with the resolution of the original case and believe it to be unjust. Nevertheless, what could be more unjust than the resolution of any one criminal case would be a holding from this court that the state was not bound to honor agreements upon which people have detrimentally relied." So in essence, they're saying when he cut the deal with Kim Fox, that ended it. And the fact that people were unhappy, they thought he got off easy, and they wound up hiring Dan Webb to get him convicted on other charges, that was basically trying him twice for the same offense, and that cannot stand.
Also this week, anti-abortion advocates and some Christian employers joining together to sue the governor and other state officials. Attorneys for the Thomas More Society filed a federal lawsuit. They say a state law requiring health insurers to cover elective abortions and abortion-related drugs is unconstitutional. In a statement, the group says the mandates violate, quote, free exercise and expressive association rights guaranteed by the First Amendment. Well, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and WAND-TV's Mike Miletich. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.